Thanks so much, Salim, for taking us on this journey from Hadra to Hadra. In this shift from talk to procession, from Congress Hall dedication speech to the sounds of the hall itself, you opened a passage that cuts through the linguistic and contextual disorientation of diasporic experience, turning it around as what I think is a pretty radical proposition to rethink what orientation might mean. And the same goes for translation and mistranslation. But let me back up to share some background with our audience. Since around 2018, artist, designer, coder, polyglot Salim Bayari and his brother Taib have been developing together an algorithm machine known as the Hadra Collider, which is what we just experienced. It's a conceptual device referring to the Large Hadron Collider that Salim has reimagined as a particle accelerator built inside his throat. The collision here becomes a generative force, loosening our minds and maybe our mouths. What you heard were excerpts from Hugh Stubbins' 1957 speech made on the occasion of the opening of the Hakave, interspersed with images and sounds from around the house from today, as well as passages from Salim's own A Migrant Prayer and phrases pulled from the bad translations you saw moving through the Hadra Collider. Stubbins's attention to freedom in the speech, particularly freedom of expression, and to quote, the power of cooperative effort between two free societies feels utterly unrelatable today in its overt Cold War ideological grandstanding. It feels, in fact, like another language. What becomes audible, then, with the Hadra Collider, in the passage from talk to procession, from Hadra to Hadra, is the obsolescence of technologies of communication that have exhausted themselves, from the ideological vocabularies of cultural policy to the technical possibilities of linguistic interpretation machines. But we are not here to tell you about this building, indeed. So let's turn our attention then to another building, Centre Pompidou. Shifting from post-World War II years in then West Berlin to the post-1968 years in Paris, but staying with this question of audibility, I'm very excited to welcome curators Lainis Grata and Alice Pialou to the stage. Emerging from their ongoing curatorial experiments with and interventions into the institutional politics of interdisciplinarity and performance documentation, their voices and bodies in the center opens with the questions, what does it mean to, quote, reintegrate art and cultural life, as was the ambition of Centre Pompidou from its inception in 1977, in the context of a site renowned today for its spectacular architecture, collections, and exhibition designs? And how have the less often emphasized events and actions in the museum, artistic or pedestrian, intentional or incidental, organized or improvised, been registered? Working through a virtual dialogue with materials from the Pompidou's archives, Lainis and Alice call to their aid contemporary performers and ongoing conversation partners, Keiji Kagame and Helena de Laurence, who have reacted to recordings from the archive via different performative strategies. But I leave the rest to Alice and Lainis. The floor is all yours.
Just to let you know that we'll show some quite small subtitles for some of the films. So in case you're in the back, you can maybe move a little bit forward, unless you speak French, of course.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Megan. Since our strongest wish is to work as close as possible with artists, we would like to open our presentation with a video we commissioned from the artist Keiji Kagame. This video is based on sound archives of the Centre Pompidou, about beginnings, the first phrases, the setting off of the lectures of the Centre Pompidou. Keiji Kagame lives and works in Geneva. She's an actress and an author of performances, sound pieces, films, and installation. We can play the video.
D'autant plus que vous êtes enregistré, j'espère, et il n'y a pas de rupture.
Attends.
Attendez, Régie. Oui, non. La soirée est sérieuse. D'autant plus que vous êtes enregistré, j'espère. Donc, il n'y a pas eu de respect de bande. Monsieur le régisseur du son, vous enregistrez tout ce que nous disons, parce que c'est important. Je suis désolé, quelquefois, ça n'est pas important au centre Pompidou, mais cette fois-ci, ça l'est. Alors, vous enregistrez bien et vous n'êtes pas en rupture de bande. Je suis désolé, mais il faudrait quand même qu'on cesse de nous traiter comme... des imbéciles. Alors, il n'y a pas de rupture du son. Bon.
Ça m'est égal.
Là, je commence.
Voilà.
Attendez, Régie. Non. Là, soyons sérieux. D'autant plus que vous êtes... Il n'y a pas eu de...
La revue parlée.
Ce soir. Après un certain nombre de reports.
Nous sommes heureux d'accueillir.
Oui, tu es content. Très bien.
Comme cette soirée est une soirée de propagande.
Je suis tout à fait de l'avis d'Isidore Izou, qui fait la propagande pour le lettrisme. Mais je fais aussi la propagande pour le lettrisme, mais aussi pour la poésie sonore. Vous pourrez ce soir, au cours de la soirée, au cours de notre acte et de la soirée, enfin, acheter.
Peut-être au moins. Oui, le prospectus.
Oui, le prospectus.
Merci pour vous.
Vous êtes un public merveilleux. Je n'espérais pas autant d'applaudissements.
J'espère que nous avons tous été charmants.
So, like Megan said, and as you probably all know, the Centre Pompidou is a world-renowned cultural center. So it's famous for its iconic and spectacular architecture, for its outstanding collection of modern masterpieces. And it's, of course, it's bold and innovative exhibitions, but that's not what we want to talk about today. We would actually like to talk about the Centre Pompidou, not only as a place of objects, but as a place of actions. So it's a place of bodies that are moving, mingling, dancing, clapping, and a place of voices, speaking, mumbling, shouting, and laughing. Tonight, we'd like to share with you our work in progress in trying to map out this past. How have these actions been preserved and recorded? In fact, how does the archive not only record the event, but also produce and create the past event? We'd like to discuss how the social realities of the past can resurface through the examination and reactivation of archives, and also talk about some of the problems that we're facing in doing this. The archives of the institution hold information about the artistic, but also the legal, the financial, and social aspects of the work it presents. And in that way, the archive deepens our understanding of what constitutes the artwork in the museum context. So for us to examine the archives is a way to lay bare how meaning has been constructed in our institution. And in order to expand this institutional historiography, we wish to look at things that go beyond the symbolical point of gravity. So because we are speaking from the centre, the center, literally and figuratively, we need to listen and pay attention to what's been considered the margins. And just quickly before we begin, we'd like to extend our thanks, of course, to first and foremost to Megan Hetcher for this wonderful invitation and for the stimulating framework of this evening and our co-panelists.
We'd like also to express our gratitude to the Haus Kultur in der Welt team for initiating this impressive archive project that we've been seeing developed over the last past years, and for the excellent hostship here in Berlin.
And finally, also, of course, a shout out to all of our colleagues in Paris and Centre Pompidou, with whom we've been able to imagine this project and many others, and all of them who make this unlikely village come to life day after day.
So Linus and I were not archivists or collection curators. We are program curators, and our mission is not to conserve documents. Our role is to initiate and organize program of performing arts and to question ourselves about the history of live programming. So even if programming art and live poetry were an essential part of the Centre Pompidou's initial project, we must admit that there is today a sort of hierarchy between exhibition and performing arts at the Centre Pompidou. So today we would like to highlight the archive documents that reflect the rich history of the programming department. It was only our individual interest and curiosity that led us to investigate this history of our department. Starting from this personal curiosity, we explored, we searched, we tried to gather and organize this material with the aim of making it accessible to artists in the perspective of invitation at the Centre Pompidou. But you don't choose your own family, and the documents we came across are not always the kind of things we wish to find. The history of programming is a history of choices and tasted of a period, and we look at it today with new perspective and new expectations, like the place given to women in this artistic field, or to non-European artists, and so on. And those who hold a living memory will not necessarily question their own choices, but we, the successors, the heirs, are taking a new look at this institutional programming archives. And our intention is to invite contemporary artists to explore and use this material with all the questions that it raises today.
C'est sensible, enfin, les progrès.
Mais c'est vraiment, je trouve ici, la plus belle vue de Paris. C'est tout à fait quelque chose d'extraordinaire.
C'est de là qu'on peut mieux voir Paris.
On ne connaissait pas cette vue. C'est la
on
vue
est en plein centre de Paris.
En plein centre, en haut. Et contrairement à ce qu'on avait dit, c'est parfaitement intégré dans le paysage, parce que nous sommes au fond ici moins haut que la tour Saint-Jacques, moins haut que les tours de Notre-Dame, oui. Moins haut que l'hôtel de ville. Et pourtant, on a probablement la plus belle vue de Paris.
Ça, je suis bien contente.
Oui.
Vraiment, ça fait plaisir parce que... Comme c'est toujours en retard, généralement, les constructions de bâtiments sur toute cette importance,
ouais,
on pense que fini à temps.
Oui, ça va faire une salle absolument fantastique.
C'est immense, hein.
Fantastique. Enfin, nous allons, enfin, la France va avoir un musée.
Oui.
Oui, alors là, au fond, on est dans le hall.
Oui.
On est dans le hall, et ça, c'est le forum. Alors, dans le forum, si je comprends bien, il va y avoir des expositions temporaires, des sculptures...
Une animation permanente.
Une animation permanente, des orchestres... Oui. Ce qui est vraiment fantastique, c'est d'abord de terminer ça dans les temps et d'avoir terminé à la fin de l'année. Je dirais que de ne pas avoir dépassé le devis et d'être resté toujours dans les prix, ce qui n'est pas tellement courant. Et puis enfin, de doter la France vraiment d'un centre qui permettra de réaliser toute la synthèse des forces.
Toute la création artistique contemporaine, dans toutes ses expressions, parce que... On n'a jamais jusqu'à présent mélangé la peinture, la musique, le livre. Ça, c'est pas mélangé, d'habitude.
L'esthétique industrielle.
L'esthétique industrielle, c'était des choses qui se trouvaient séparées, dispersées. Ça va se trouver réunies en un même endroit. C'est quand même... Ça change tout.
Ce sera la grande œuvre du XXe siècle, le centre. Et au fond, c'est ce qu'avait bien voulu le président Pompidou. Qu'un essentiel, ce qu'il aura marqué l'histoire de notre pays... Par une, entre autres choses, par une réalisation fondamentale qui redonnera à la France son rôle et sa place dans la création artistique contemporaine. Et ça, c'est tout essentiel. C'est un acte de foi dans l'avenir.
So, this excerpt shows Claude Pompidou, who was the widow of Georges Pompidou, the deceased French president, who took the initiative to create a new National Cultural Center. And for those of you who didn't recognize him, Jacques Chirac, the then prime minister and future president of the French Republic. So what is this constant liveliness that they're talking about? What are these orchestras that they promise? The Centre Pompidou project is one of reunification and reintegration through the means of versatility and interdisciplinarity. In fact, its outspoken ambition was inherited from the political struggles of the 1960s and marked also by the end of a period of economic growth. And the goal was precisely to reconcile realities and to reintegrate art and culture into life. Annette Mikkelsen in Art Forum considered Centre Pompidou to be the supreme example of imagination in the late capitalist society. The festivity, which was a strategy used by protesters in May 1968 to transform the struggles is perhaps here sublimated and contained into liveliness, constant but always directed. To capture the essence of the new museum, the French poet Francis Ponge coined the term movement, a moving monument. Furthermore, he used the body as a metaphor for the institution itself. A heart in the heart of Paris, a muscle, a pump that inhales and pushes back with never-ending beats, restlessly bringing other bodies to life, bodies that this body itself touches. The new museum space becomes the place for a form of social choreography, where the architecture of the institution itself guides and instructs the public that visit this functionally organized space for their aesthetic pleasure, but also for their education as citizens. So a striking happening like the events by Merce Cunningham in the Forum in 1979 epitomizes the way that this institutional choreography interplays with the dance choreography of the bodies of the performers. So we have begun mapping out the first years of theater, dance, and performance. And indeed, the first years of the Centre Pompidou shows an eclectic program of performing arts. So tendencies are leaning towards French artists, works rooted in or referencing European modernism, but also towards open rehearsals and workshops, as to show art as an ongoing work, as something constant, something lively. The evidence is fragmentary and sometimes impossible to piece together, because performances were rarely filmed, so making sense of this past is by necessity an ongoing work. Some stage shows like If the Ephemeral is Eternal from 1977 by the painter and writer Michel Sefort on a set designed by Mondrian, with a multitude of artists collaborating, among them Jamaican-born, Paris-based choreographer Elsa Voliasten, point to new interesting discoveries to be made and new and lesser-known collaborations to be highlighted. In general, the archival documents attest to the sometimes complicated nature of bringing together different art forms, because art forms in France are subject to specific administrative protocols. And as such, the interdisciplinary promise is more perhaps a question of peaceful coexistence than one of true intermingling of the arts. Performance artworks explicitly created for the museum space are still rare. So the following excerpt is from a performance workshop given in 1979 by Gina Pan, a French performance artist. And this unpublished video documentation from the audiovisual archives of the Centre Pompidou takes place in one of the galleries and shows us some reactions of the audience. The way it's recorded also imbues this testimony with a further sense. The filming of a mirror that's gradually covered with black paint eventually denies the archive of any representational capacity.
Ouais.
La Revue Parlée was part of the Centre Pompidou's initial multidisciplinary ambition. This program was created in 1977 at the opening of the Centre Pompidou to highlight the oral dimension of the literature. The aim was to create a framework for artists and authors who use their voice as their main material. La Revue Parlée organized around 900 events between 1977 to 1992 until the death of its director, the director of this program, Blaise Gauthier. La Revue Parlée has received a multitude of representatives of various movements in poetry, from the sound poetry with Jean-Jacques Lebel's polyphonic events to the letterist poetry with Isidore Isou. La Revue Parlée has also a significant number of foreign authors such as Lawrence Ferlinghetti, John Giorno, William Burroughs, Brian Gysing, Nanni Balestrini, etc. An event of poetry lectures often brought together several poets who performed one after the other in the way of a printed magazine in which the contributions are spread out over the pages. 2 years ago, we started to build up a library of lectures from La Revue Parlée, focusing on poetry and literature. But a huge amount of work remained to be done and will be carried out by different departments of the Centre Pompidou over the next few years. A lot of these lecture and audio documents are already online, but are somewhat difficult to find. We hope that the compilation, indexation, classification, and conservation process will make possible to offer to the public an easy digital access to this archival material. But as we said earlier, we are speaking from the center, so let's listen to the margin. In the context of this symposium that focuses on activation activism, we wanted to take the opportunity to enlarge the spectrum of recording material. We felt that it would be interesting to flip the situation and to look at the institutional sound archive from the other way around. Because any sound recorded in an auditorium can become an archive.
So be warned.
Mesdames, messieurs, pour le confort de tous, n'oubliez pas d'éteindre votre portable. Nous vous rappelons qu'il est interdit de fumer dans le Centre Pompidou et que pour des raisons de sécurité, vous ne devez pas vous asseoir dans les allées. Afin de protéger les droits d'auteur et les droits voisins des artistes-interprètes, tout enregistrement est interdit. Nous vous souhaitons de passer un agréable moment.
The footprints of politics are not only to be found in the invitation to one artist or another. The introductions, the failures, the failed starts, the audience reactions, the applause, and so on, are all evidences of the sociological and political context of the time. The surrounded sounds reveal much about what an institutional archive is. They testify to the institutional context that frames the artistic content. They give the institutional context of the invitation. Conference openings, for example, gives a lot of information about the general social and political climate. Let's listen some sounds, some of Blaise Gauthier's introduction, which mentioned the ongoing strikes and their interconnection with the artistic programs presented at the Centre Pompidou. These short introductions also gives information on the way the relationship between the strikers and the artistic programmers is played out, which can be mixed between discomfort and support.
Rebonsoir donc, et au nom de la Revue Parlée et des organisateurs du 10e Festival international de poésie, musique et vidéo Polyphonics, bienvenue. Malgré cette journée de grève qui nous a fait marcher, et c'est pas plus mal d'ailleurs, vive la grève, mais alors générale plutôt. Hein? Comme ça, on pourra faire plus de poésie et d'autres choses intéressantes.
And another one.
Je dois dire que c'est tout à fait un plaisir pour nous, à la revue Parler, de présenter la revue L'Ennemi pour son 10e anniversaire. En effet, nous l'avions présentée dans de très mauvaises conditions. Quelques documents anciens en font foi en 1983, mais malheureusement, il y avait à ce moment-là une grève du nettoyage dans le centre, et nous avions dû nous réfugier précipitamment, mais pour d'assez jolies séances, si mon souvenir est bon, au Centre culturel belge.
So let's listen to some other sounds. Let's go to the other side of the stage, on the side of the audience. This is an extract of a lecture given by Brian Geisen and William Burroughs in June 1977. At the occasion of an American program at the Centre Pompidou.
Cold. Our recipe for jugged hare dates back to the Crusades, and there's an interesting story recorded in our family archives. I am sure our young American guest... la régie, où est la sécurité ce soir? Où est la sécurité ce soir? La régie, ils vont crever l'écran. Qui a le micro? Moi. Je m'excuse d'un acte de violence à l'instant. Je m'excuse devant moi-même d'abord et devant vous autres et devant ce garçon. Mais il me semblait qu'il arrive des moments où, pour continuer la volonté de la majorité, il faut faire des petits écarts. Et je m'en excuse encore. J'ai honte de moi-même et j'ai honte de ces jeunes gens, mais encore beaucoup plus de moi-même de lui avoir fait ce que je viens de faire. Et je m'en excuse auprès de vous tous.
These sounds of the audience, which frame the poetry, are archival documents that reveal the matter of the reception of the works and gives information on the generational gaps that can also sometimes condition it. Here we saw that the reception of the beat generation, for example, can be very different from one generation to another and then become fashionable again to the next.
And to conclude, we would like to close this presentation with a another video creation by Helena de Laurence this time. So Helena de Laurence lives and works in Paris, and she travels the territories between performance, dance, and theater. To close our presentation, Helena has chosen to work on another set of sounds, the kind of sounds maybe that we all hope to hear at the end of a presentation, the applause of the Centre Pompidou.
Thank you. Okay, for one last time tonight, I'll come up on the stage, thanks Linus and Alice, to introduce our last performance, last but not least, Paolo Montesinos Oliva. Paolo's Revolve is a site-specific sonic performance spatialized especially for the Hakave Theater, which activates Paolo, her ongoing research inquiry into how to bend history, spiral perspectives of political space-time. The work assembles, samples, and repurposes found sounds and living archives from the social uprising in Chile on 18 October 2019, layering these together with live electronics that have mostly been hand-built by Paola herself and that tune us between the digital and the analog. The project has been fed with the contributions of collectives including Barricada Sonora, Sonoras, Radio Pasajes, Museo Sonora de la Revuelta, and Museo del Estallido Social, among others. Countering the violence of the ethnographic field recording, the sonicscape Paulo weaves is coming and going and never quite graspable. To capture it or single out a solo voice or drum beat is impossible and indeed to miss the point. Revolve is not interested in capturing anything, but rather in bringing to the foreground the subversive potency of sound as a force of transformation and reorganization. This is about how public space is populated, how collective voices, sounds, and movements live together as our principal tools for listening to political claims. Listening through the noise. And leaning into the perhaps slightly overwhelming cacophonous experience of how sound touches us. The time is what creates difference in everything about listening, perceiving, and being. And speaking of touch and time, I'll close, and I won't come back up afterwards, I promise. I close with these final few words by extending an invitation on behalf of Paula to all of you. A point will come in the performance when the light in the room opens up, and at this point, Paula welcomes us to get out of our seats. The sound will be moving around us, and with time, she hopes we begin moving with it. Thank you.